And so the guru may almost literally push you into the lap of defeat. You are struggling, you are very hard. He pushes you into a situation where defeat stares you in the face. Dishonor stares you in the face. And he says, now watch, see what happens within you. If you are able to take it, take it. You have gained some strength. These used to be considered pests, but I am beginning to see that probably they are not. Because I could see from what Swami Shivananda used to do to some of us, that those were not really tests, but tremendous acts of training, disciplining, self-disciplining. It's possible that if the student is not strong enough, might collapse. Well, if he's not strong enough, any little wind that passes, that blows, is bound to knock him down at any time. He had an extraordinary approach to this. He supported without supporting. Does this make any sense at all? That is the key expression. He supported without supporting. So the next one has to be taken with a pinch of salt. He gave the students an illusion of support. He was not going to support them.
But you're not holding.
Not holding.
And that helps them stay up.
That helps them stay up. You may not even be, if they fell down, you may not even have the strength to hold them and prevent them from falling. Right, correct.
Where we haven't had a guru, do not feel that God sometimes, or we ourselves, we lead ourselves into situations where we can hurt and suffer, and no peeling off, and a lot of pride, and yet grow through that to lose oneself and die, and do a lot of dying to oneself.
The same thing. The guru is Ishvaro Guru Atmeti. These three are identical. God, Guru, and the innermost self, not the Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, or the American, or the Indian, or that sort of thing. But something deep within, the reality within, that the Guru and God, they are identical.
Do you believe that one can find salvation without a Guru, or that a Guru is necessary?
The point is, what is a guru?
The guru and God.
Yeah, right. That which leads you to salvation, whatever it is a guru.
Because it doesn't need to be a person.
Maybe, may not be. More often than not, we find that embodied somewhere or the other. Embodied. I didn't say Mr. or Mrs. It may even be a dog or a cat or a donkey or a tree. Yeah, there was a bird. We find that more often than not, this message comes to us in a body. That's the way we look at this the saying of Jesus Christ too. I am the light. No one comes to the Father but by me. The word light is Guru.
And my vision of the light that day in meditation in Toronto was there is the personification in Venkatesananda of all that I've been yearning, my heart, soul seeking. And it was this image and vision
That's
of
all.
Christ and Babaji and Gandhi falling on Mr. Bhagavan.
That which is cosmic becomes manifest somewhere, in some form. May not. If that guru is not, doesn't come to you as a person or as an embodiment, that guru does not come to you as a person or as an embodiment. Where do you get the inspiration for salvation from? If that guru does not come to you in the form of a person, it's a tricky question. So, where do you get the inspiration from? If the guru does not come to you in the form of a person or an embodiment, where do you get the inspiration from? Inside?
Perhaps inside.
Inside. Isn't that an embodiment? It has to come from somewhere, that's all that.
Back to the illusion of support, because you seem to say two things that Shivananda or the teacher would place.
Right. He does not. Yeah, right. He does not offer himself as a support, so that the seeker forever leans on something. Then he is lost. Then he is lost. If the seeker is encouraged forever to lean on something, then his legs become crippled.
It's like the crutch, yes.
They're just like the crutch. No, no, worse, madam. The if you have seen legs which have remained in plaster in Paris cast,
yes,
for a long, long time, they shrivel up. So if the support becomes a crutch or a plaster cast, then it's finished. So, and yet, if the student does not have the feeling that he, there is somebody who, behind, something somewhere is going to protect me if I fall down the cliff, he is frightened and he doesn't want to proceed. And so the master may place in front of him a situation of which he is afraid, gently give him a push, making the student feel, I am here. Don't worry. If he falls down, never mind, he pulls him up.
He doesn't abandon him at
all. No. Yeah. Unless the student abandons the teacher doesn't abandon the student. Because, yeah, right. Here, it is the spiritual relationship must be clearly understood. The relationship is not merely on the personal, human level, or the physical level. The relationship is far deeper. It is at a level at which abandonment is not possible. You and I are two different beings on the physical level. When spiritually we are one, what is abandonment? And therefore, when you look at the guru, it is not this form. Obviously, you are looking only at the form, but inwardly your faith is not on this physical form, but the spiritual entity in it that is undying, and that is you are it. At that point, there is no division at all. On that plane, there is no division at all.
You're saying then that this happens to both the student and teacher. They both know it, having completely experienced it. So if there's any doubt left, then it hasn't happened.
Only in the, on the part of the student.
On the part of the student.
There's no doubt on the part of the teacher.
Mm-hmm. How do you know when your student and doubt is because you haven't experienced, or doubt is because you don't understand you've experienced?
I wonder if you see the simplest answer. What is the difference, sir?
I don't know. I'm asking.
What is the difference? After all, what is an experience if there is no understanding of the experience? An experience is the understanding of it, isn't it? Is there an experience in which there is no understanding of the experience? That is a dull, a dead thing. There's nothing, there's no experience at all. It's a physical movement, a physical motion.
But understanding, sometimes these things aren't too graspable on an intellectual...
No, not rational. Intellectual. We are not talking about intellectual understanding. We are talking...
That's how I try to get some comprehension, and it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. Intellectual comprehension is not possible of spiritual truths. They are elusive. And the... As a matter of fact, the danger is worse there. Because... Even when the intellect says, I have understood, you have not understood.
Mm-hmm. Now they're using for spirit level, they're saying that I know it in my gut.
Right,
yes.
Correct,
yes.
Correct. That's the only level at which any understanding takes place, experience takes place. This is another, yeah, right. It used to happen quite often in the case of Swami Shivananda. Somebody sits in front of him and talks to him. And he says just a few words, one or two words here and there. And all he is one eye closed and looking like this. That's all. So simple. That's it. You go to your room, you go away to Delhi or somewhere else, you blink and say, that wasn't all at all. It's completely different. In his presence, it seemed to be so easy. So simple. Outside, it's not so simple. And then you blame Delhi, or you blame Calcutta. You blame your job, you blame your house. Someone was arguing with me, householder. Nobody holds a house. And everybody, even the Swamis, live in a house. So you find you completely lost. That is because the person did not understand with the heart, but tried to understand, figure it out with the brain. And the first time I felt a bit of a revulsion and shock was when a very respectable man in Mysore came to see me when I was there. He called himself a disciple of Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi had often said, as often as possible, said he had no disciples. He decided that he was Ramana Maharshi's disciple. And I was, of course, very anxious to know how he met him and what he was and so on. Then he said, I went to the ashram just about 2 years before he passed away. And there were about 20 or 30 people sitting around the hall. And Ramana Maharshi was gazing at the ceiling as usual. And after a little while he rolled his eye and looked straight at me. And there was enlightenment. It's possible. I'm not saying it's not possible. For instance, if he had at that moment approached the whole problem at gut level, it might probably have happened. That is wishful thinking. It is a nice word for it. He looked at you. He had to look at something somewhere. What do you want him to do? He was probably tired of looking at you. But then, Ramana Maharshi himself says in that talks with Ramana Maharshi, he says it's called Shaktipat, you know, the everybody seems to know that now. That it is direct transmission of spiritual power takes place, listen very carefully, direct transmission of spiritual power takes place when you learn to look, to see, to listen, to understand with your heart. When all these avenues are closed, as it were, and the heart is open. Then you understand in a very different way, completely different way. You still go out and say, well, I really don't know, that's it. But this gentleman was a scholar, and that sort of thing. So he had to go and explain what happened. And in that explanation, the whole thing was watered down, destroyed.